where the white water flows. So last weekend was Father's Day weekend, and I also had my 35th birthday. And every time I have a birthday, I can't help but think of a very special time that I spent with my dad when I was very little. My dad used to take me to this place in the Whitewater River Valley, deep, deep down into this valley. He would go fly fishing for trout, and my brothers and I would kind of roam, unsupervised in nature, and we had a lot of fun out there. When I was in first grade, my dad took me and about a dozen kids in this passenger van for my birthday to this place, and we all ran around unsupervised, and it was amazing. This year for my birthday, I ate a quarter of a Dairy Queen cake by myself, and some of which happened after my wife and kids went to bed. So I guess things change a little bit, as you get up there in age. The special place that I went with my father, it had a name. It had a name, and it was called Lloyd's Pasture. Lloyd's Pasture. And in this particular place, it existed where my father grew up. In a little town. You would have to take this gravel road down a winding valley where cell phones don't work and you couldn't check an email if your life depended on it. There was a big open pasture, and this farmer, Lloyd, he allowed people to camp, to hunt, to fish, to just enjoy themselves on his hundreds of acres of land. The caveat was that his cows and cattle roamed all over the place, and there was a little sign at the front gate that said, "Take only pictures and fish, leave only footprints." Dozens of times throughout my childhood, I went to this place with my father, and he would take my brothers with as well. And it's been incredibly important to me throughout the years, this Lloyd's Pasture place. I remember catching frogs and crayfish in the streams with my brothers and putting them in these empty ice cream pails. We would go down into the water and we would build dams out of rocks and logs and watercress until someone would inevitably get hurt by pinching a finger in the water under a rock. I remember camping in tents and in this 80s brown and beige colored pop-up camper that my folks had when I was a little boy. When I was in fourth grade or so, we used to bring all kinds of fireworks there. Fireworks were illegal in Minnesota at the time, but, you're kind of off the map, so to speak. And we'd shoot Roman candles and bottle rockets and stuff at each other. And we'd blow up cow pies with firecrackers. We'd sit around the campfire and we'd talk and we'd grill hot dogs and you'd get chewed by the mosquitoes. As a teenager, my dad, he bought me a fly fishing pole and wanted me to take up the family craft, so to speak, of following in his footsteps as a fisherman. I never quite got the hang of it, and one time when we went there, it stormed really badly, and we had the pole on the roof of the car, and he drove off. We lost it. We only got to use it like twice. I'd bring friends in high school to the pasture to tube down the streams to jump into this big lake with a tire swing. I brought a college girlfriend there and had a breakup talk. I brought my wife there with our dog, and she did not like the bugs very much, or the cow pies. The dog loved it, though. I want to bring my kids there when I'm on vacation next week. I think it'll be fun. And I am certain that someday when I pass, I want my ashes spread in this place. Do you have a place like that in your life? A special place, a refuge? A place that's kind of timeless? I wonder. See, I have a lot of memories of this place where the Whitewater River flows. It hasn't changed. Every time I go back, it's pretty much the same place. The memories I had there were amazing. They helped make me into the person that I am today. But the thing is, those are memories of this place. They have happened. They are over. I can't go back to those times, even though I can go back to the place. And I think because of that, it would be kind of scary for me. It might even hurt me a little bit if I were to go back there and something significant would have changed about the place. Because of how important it's been throughout my life. I would hate to go back and have there be a shopping mall there instead of the pasture. I think it's scary sometimes, the unknown. And the unknown sometimes comes from change. And if you ever have wondered how the scriptures deal with change, or if people in the Bible ever feel the way that we do about change and the unknown, kind of being intimidating or kind of scary, then I think the story that Randine read today from our gospel lesson from Luke is for you. Because I think our lesson says something about change, and I think it can tell us something about how we might think about change as a church, maybe the church of the future. So I want to talk with you a little bit about Luke's lesson for us and pray about how it can guide us, especially in the midst of the Spirit moving in our denominational gathering of the 32nd General Synod, where we're talking about some changes, good changes. Change can be a little scary. Let's talk about it. So Luke 8 tells of a time when Jesus and his disciples encountered a person from Gerasene who had a whole army, a legion of demons that tormented him. This person sometimes had to be chained up because the unclean spirits would seize them. They would wear no clothes. They would stand in the street naked. They would live among the tombs, the place of the dead. Now, this was probably quite the sight to see. Now, I imagine there's some cultural stuff that may be kind of lost on us. What is meant by demons? You know, what afflicted this child of God? Was it illness? Was it PTSD? Was it some other chemical or biological or spiritual or supernatural force? We don't really know what it is. But what we do know is that this child of God, this one, was not well, that he was tormented, tortured by these demons, and demons in all sorts of different manifestations in the scriptures have one thing in common. They have one thing in common. They serve to separate and divide people from one another. Their purpose, according to Dr. Root, Andy Root, is to disrupt, to divide, to separate. They divide and separate people from one another. They seize, they interrupt, they steal lives away. They stand in the way of people living a quote-unquote a normal, functional life in community with others. They stand in the way of that person having a hopeful future. They simply consume their life and they ruin it. And so people avoid them in the scriptures. They think they are lost causes. They pity them. Or maybe they make them live among the tombs. Our story this morning tells us that somehow, some way, we don't know the physics of the miracle, but Jesus cast the demons out of this person. And the demons recognize Jesus and they fear him. They beg him, in fact, to spare them by sending them out. Sending them out away from the abyss, but into another living thing. So Jesus somehow, some way, sends the demons into a herd of pigs. The pigs run down into a lake and they are drowned. Somehow this is better than being sent to the abyss. The abyss must not be good. The pig farmers witness this happening. They run away to tell everyone what they have seen. They bear witness. And we hear that the one who had been possessed comes to sit at the foot of Jesus, wearing clothes, appearing to be in their right mind. So Jesus saves the day, right? After all, things have changed for the better. This is a good thing. This child of God has been restored. You know, as I was telling you a little bit about that story about the white water, where the white water flows, and how I would be anxious if something changed about that place, if it all of a sudden became a Walmart or a shopping mart. You know, because the change is unknown. And the unknown is kind of scary. I think that can give us some insight into what happens next. You would think that after a miraculous healing and positive change, that people would be lining up to get a picture with Jesus. But instead, the people in Gerasene wanted him to get the heck out of there. The pig farmers were PO'd. Jesus had healed this guy, but in the process, they're pigs. They were gone. The rest of the crowd was afraid, we hear. Well, what gives? You know, I think there's more to this than, you know, these folks seeing Jesus doing something miraculous or hearing about it and getting freaked out by it. You know? I think instead, It has to do with the change. Instead of recognizing all the good that Jesus has done in restoring this child of God, the people are afraid of what he has changed. Even the pig farmers, who might not have been Jewish, even if they were, they were probably in the lowest of the rung. They were afraid of what Jesus was able to change here and what he might change. I mean, if Jesus can change this person with an unclean spirit, with a legion of demons, who's an absolute hot mess, walking around naked and having seizures and convulsions and living among the tombs and whatnot, what couldn't he change? You know, we hear kind of in our national conversations, fears, escalating fears of unknown and change, right? We hear that sort of language. If they ban this, then what's next? If we give them this right, then they're going to want something else. If they take this away from me, where does it stop? The change that Jesus does in this person's life frightens them. For the one who was lost is now found. The one who was an outsider can now be reunited with community or have a life again. Change is too much. So the people want Jesus to leave. You know, I think when it comes down to it, the people in Gerasene were more afraid of the change that Jesus was bringing than they were of the demons that lived there all along. Perhaps this is because it's hard to let go of the past, what we perceive to be unfair when it's changed. So rather than being thankful for the healing of this man, the people in the city were upset and afraid of what Jesus had done and what he might do. They were upset because the man was changed from someone that they knew and were okay with. And we know that guy lives among the tombs. You know, we know he's a little touched. We know he's different. But now he was someone new. Seems the folks would have rather have had him stay the same and deal with his army of demons than deal with the newness of him being changed. They were more afraid of what Jesus could do and the change that had happened than a whole army of demons. And I wonder what this might mean for us when we think about change in society, in our culture, in the church, and especially today. When I think about that place where the white water flows and that time that I had with my dad there, I think about a place that's sacred to me. A place that's filled with memories, a place that's a part of who I am because I spent some wonderful and meaningful time there. A place that seems timeless, despite me having changed and grown up. But I recall a change to that place. You know, I remember going there almost a decade ago with my wife, and there was this big electric fence around the pasture, and you needed a key to get in. We had to be let in by somebody. This made me so angry. I felt like I was entitled to being in this place where I had all of these memories and this experience. It wasn't like that when I was growing up. The place that I knew and I loved from when I was a child, it had changed. No. Not much had changed, but it still had changed. And if it starts with a fence, what other changes were coming? I was upset because I knew I was comfortable and familiar with what was there, what was important to me. But it was different. It was no longer comfortable or familiar. Our gospel story says something about this, I believe. Because the people were more upset about the fact that this man was changed than the fact that Jesus had done something wonderful for his life. They were familiar with him. They knew him as the naked person who had seizures and stood in the street, but now they didn't know what to expect. Change can be unknown. The unknown can be scary. But the unknown and change can lead to great things. It can lead to lives made better. It can lead to reconciliation and wholeness. I think Jesus knew this, but the Gerasene people didn't see it. And perhaps we need a little convincing too. That place where the white water flows is kind of like the church. a safe place, a sanctuary. We have memories of this place and any of the churches where we are from. The church is certainly sacred and houses all kinds of memories and experiences. But as we change, it has to change too. It may be hard to let go of the past, to let go of our fears of what change might bring. It's not what we're used to. The people in Gerasene were perhaps more afraid of the change that Jesus was bringing than they were of the demons that were there. I wonder if we, as people of faith at Christ Church, are afraid of change. We may need to embrace shifts in our culture as a church in the future because of the good it may do. This week in the national setting of the UCC, as we gather at General Synod 32, we may hear about some denominational shifts or changes or opportunities for us to shift and to live into our identity as a UCC congregation in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. I want you to know that for us, just like that pastor, the church is the same. It means something important to us, but we are different. We change. Our denomination, our culture changed, so we need to approach things differently sometimes. That place where the white water flows is also kind of like a metaphor for our country right now. Some people reminisce about things which are long gone, days past. Our world is different today than it was 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago. When we think of regressive or oppressive policy changes that strip away the rights of persons to hearken back to some mythical golden age, it may be like when I visited that farmer's pasture as an adult, expecting it to be the same as it was when I was a kid, to just go back in time. Luke's gospel speaks volumes, I think, to our world right now. Hate towards immigrants and the poor, segregation and racism, violence, policies against LGBTQ folks. All of these things are kind of like the demons that haunted that man, keeping him from living with his neighbors in community, in full communion with them, dividing and separating him from them, rather than uniting him with them. To act in good faith toward justice with these issues in a way that fosters positive change is almost like when Jesus exorcised the legion of demons from that person. And perhaps if we act in good faith towards positive change, good change, it is like exorcising those demons from our wider culture. But often we are complicit in driving those away who strive for that change, just like the swineherds and the townsfolks who drove Jesus away. At the end of our story, Jesus hops on a boat. He leaves town. The one who was healed wants to come with him. But Jesus says, no, you have work to do. Go back home and proclaim what God has done for you. The good news is that Jesus has showed us what it looks like to move from hopelessness to hope by healing this one who seems like a complete lost cause. Even the most demon-addled person receives grace and growth and healing in Christ. And even though the formerly demon-possessed man wants to come with Jesus, Jesus puts the ball in his court to go and tell the people about this change and what it did for you. In a way, we've seen these demons alive in the world today, in our shortcomings, in the shortcomings of our culture. In our story from Luke, we've seen, though, what life can be like, moving from hopelessness to hope in the man who was healed. Jesus perhaps has put the ball in our court to cast a vision of a hopeful future where racism and fear of our neighbors and violence and oppression are no more. You know, we are scared of change, and I speak that generally. We sometimes get mad at change, at church and outside the walls of church, but Jesus tells us to walk to those people who are mad, scared of change, and show them what change and embracing it has done for you, what it could do for them, and what hope looks like. I'll say it again. The people in Gerasene were more afraid of the change Jesus was bringing, that he offered, the hope and resolution of a peaceful future, the future of inclusion, where one would be recognized as one of God's children, than they were of the demons there. It is my hope that we can learn a way that is different than the Gerasenes, all of us, myself included. But until then, we watch, we remember, we pray, we dialogue, we put hope into action to change the world that God has entrusted us to. And the people of God, God has given us the honor of caring for. The hope is that we can resist the temptation to be like the Gerasenes who drove Jesus back to the boat and told him to get the heck out of there. And that instead we can be like the one who he healed, willing to go and share the good news of what healing and restoration looks like, what change can look like, and what a hopeful future can look like. Amen?